Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Republicans on the powerful Joint Finance Committee reject the DNR's largest land conservation deal in state history. We explain why Democrats say this action leads to a much bigger concern. Plus, latest bills Governor Tony Evers will consider signing into law and the GOP-authored proposals he's likely to veto. And after years of opposition, could this be the year top Republicans get behind a medical marijuana bill? All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for April 21st.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., this week we're going to start with the Joint Finance Committee. Now, of course, they're still going on their tours for budget listening sessions, but they also still have other work to do, which is approving agency heads and their projects and some of their requests. They also have power over many lawsuits, which go forth through the DOJ, etc. So on Tuesday, what the committee did is that they voted along party lines to reject a DNR request for $4 million in state stewardship funds that would be for one of the largest land conservation deals in state history. And so in rejecting this money, Republicans kind of decried with what they said was mismanagement of the project by the Department of Natural Resources and outright deceit. Mm-hmm. But looking at this, JR, there's kind of a bigger concern from Democrats about this power that the Joint Finance has because they can object anonymously to these deals. And that was kind of the bigger debate that we saw when Joint Finance met earlier this week. So let's just hear from lawmakers on both sides kind of going at it about these anonymous objections and just overall how much power this committee has.
So here we are. We are now having a hearing. And I hope that there is some debate. I hope that for Pelican River there's an agreement. I would support some modification. Let's have a debate, meet those concerns, and approve something and move forward. But make no mistake that this is a hearing because this committee and the process of objecting is broken.
Right now, the state of Wisconsin owns 5.9 million acres that are either tied up in conservation easements or in public land. And if you want northern Wisconsin to be economically viable, people to be able to purchase land and build homes and enjoy it and live there, we have declining enrollment in our schools. We have areas that are going broke, and we continue to take the tools away from them to allow them to be economically viable.
These things before us today, really everything on the agenda, but especially this one, are a shining example of the need for that oversight. The DNR should be embarrassed. They should be ashamed. The fact that they thought they could shove this down the throat of the locals, pretend like there was no concerns, hide those concerns from the board. The board should be outraged.
So Joint Finance also rejected other agency requests that we'll get to in a little bit, JR, but this kind of was just a significant move specifically because it was one of the largest conservation projects in state history. But as I led into this, there's more bigger concern here.
Just with this one, Mary Felskowski, Republican from Irma, up in this northern Wisconsin, talked about how in the three counties impacted by this project, Langlade, Oneida, and Vilas, their state either owns or has easements on 1.9 million acres in those three counties alone. Statewide, she says 5.9 million. And the concern she raised is that up north has an issue with being able to survive economically. The more you put shield from development, the less room you have to build houses, right, to do things that could pull people in. So there's that concern. There's another level of concern among Republicans about how much should we own of the state publicly, how much we put aside. And also, is this good use of taxpayer dollars? So that's that piece. A private group had bought this land along this river, so they still own it. The question is kind of what happens next. Could it be developed by somebody else? I mean, that group could own it forever if it wanted to and protect it, but will somebody sell it down the road and something happen to it? That's one thing. The other level, though, is like all this stuff we're going to get into about this process. I know process isn't very exciting sometimes, that it is when it impacts these things that are as big as some of the stuff is going forward.
Right, and so some of these additional things that were rejected, let's read some of them off. It was kind of pretty old request, mm-hmm. but it was by the Department of Health Services that they wanted to spend roughly about $18 million in existing money to encourage more people on medical assistance to get the COVID-19 vaccine. There was also another DNR project to oversee the collection of water use data for the agency to satisfy its obligations under the Great Lakes Compact. And Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation wanted to get permission to use $288,000 in tax credits for renovations at a fraternity house on the UW-Madison campus. So that's not all of them, but those mm-hmm. were some of the significant ones. But as you said, too, I mean, we already know how powerful this committee is, but it just seems to be harder and harder for agencies to kind of really even get what they want.
Well, it's called the 14-day passive review process. And what that means is if an agency wants to move funding around the budget that it already has or get additional money, it has to go through this process where it submits a plan to the Joint Finance Committee. It has 14 days to review it. If no one objects in the 14 days, it's approved. If somebody objects, and they can object anonymously, then you trigger a hearing. Now, state law requires you to have a hearing, doesn't say, though, when. And during the hearing on Tuesday, Evan Goyke, Democrat from Milwaukee, brought up, you're only doing this now to cover your butts. Essentially, his point was, like the DHS request was money for these COVID-19 vaccine incentives. That was put out there in May of 2021. Now, the agency got tired of waiting for Joint Finance to act and did a smaller program below the threshold for JFC review. So that was just sitting there. The tax credits, there was a anonymous objection last summer. I asked what the deal was. There was a concern from the co-chairs that an aide to Governor Evers had served on the board overseeing this project at a fraternity house. The governor's office said, look, the guy had nothing to do with this. We don't know what you're talking about, why this is a problem. But it sat there for a year. And Goyke's point was, hey, the Supreme Court just flipped from a conservative majority to a liberal one. There are all these things out there you guys are getting to. It's a pocket veto, he said. You're worried about getting sued. We are here to protect your butts from a lawsuit going forward over this broken process. Now, with this first project we talked about, the counter was, yes, the process is broken because the DNR lied to us. So when you do a project like what they did with the DNR and this request for stewardship fund, you ask locals if there's an objection. Two local town boards raised objections, forwarded it to the local DNR office, and they sat on them. They didn't share it with anybody. And so the new secretary, I think it was last week, told the board, yeah, we kind of didn't tell you guys about this. There was a miscommunication in their agency. The DNR board approved going forward with the request without knowing about those objections. That's part of the process of the problem. Going forward, the question is, will Joint Finance feel pressured to act quicker? Because if not, you can just kind of let things sit. And they mm-hmm. sit there and sit and sit and sit. Now, this water specialist position, they brought up, we could take up this in the budget. Like, we have this thing coming up in a few weeks, it's gonna be massive, that could go in there. But some of these things, you can just sit on for a while and they just kind of don't get an answer, and it's a frustration among advocates of, why can't we get resolution to what's going on?
And of course, it's a strategy by Republicans mm-hmm. too. If it's projects they don't like or they don't approve of, they can, right now, with their power, can sit on them. But Goyke does put a good point that we are gonna see a big shift on our state Supreme Court, so maybe there could be lawsuits down the road.
I was going to say,
go ahead.
The counter is, this is oversight. Like, the committee right. has the power to review.
And they've been doing this for a very, very long time. They've had this power, yes.
So just because Evers is the governor mm-hmm. doesn't mean he gets carte blanche, whatever he wants to do. They have a
yes.
role in this. The question is it proper oversight, and should there be a time limit on how long you have to sit on something?
And that's what Bourne said, too, later in a media availability ahead of session the next day, kind of defended that the move mm-hmm. that we've been doing this all along. This has been the process. He doesn't believe there should be any need to change to it. All right, speaking of session, there was the Assembly and Senate in this week. And want to highlight just some of the bills, because some of these are headed to Governor Tony Evers' desk, and we can kind of get a hint of which ones he's going to sign and which ones he's going to veto. Let's start with the first one, which kind of comes in lieu as we're seeing states like California and Minnesota implement bans on gas-powered vehicles and machinery. So Republicans introduced a bill to kind of prohibit that from ever happening here in Wisconsin. So it would stop state and local governments from implementing bans on, you know, cars, it could be lawnmowers, snowblowers. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. As long as it has a gas engine, they don't want those to go out. Now, this is all an effort of other states states that are doing this, you know, to go green, to reduce pollutants. This bill, we specifically asked the governor about it at an event, and he didn't think that these bans were necessary. So that one, likely doomed for a veto pen. Another one that he's likely to sign is AB 55, which would double reckless driving fines. It was, I believe, a week or two ago, Governor Evers signed another reckless driving bill into law, so these go hand in hand after both the Senate and Assembly passed them. So he'll likely sign that one. Senate Bill 76 would impose stiffer penalties on carjacking offense. This was introduced by Representative Spiros because he kind of stated that there's been a huge increase in Milwaukee and Madison of people, you know, maybe just leaving the keys in the car, running into the gas station, and people are stealing these cars. So that would tackle those offenses. We have heard from Evers a while ago that he is going to sign that one. And the last one we want to highlight is one that a bill that would allow people who sue to obtain public records to have their attorney fees reimbursed, even if the documents are eventually turned over voluntarily. That one I haven't heard from the governor specifically about, so that one remains a question. But want to just go back to the first bill that about these gas-powered vehicles and these bans, because that was kind of real the heat of debate on the floor in the Assembly from Democrats and Republicans. So let's just hear those arguments, and then we'll dive more into these bills.
These bills are unnecessary. These bills are really a solution that is looking for a problem that does not exist. The GOP mantra used to be, oh my goodness, the Democrats want to take our guns away. Now it's, oh my goodness, the Democrats want to take our gasoline away. That is not true. We're not anywhere near having an EV revolution.
Will a future governor of Wisconsin go down that road? Hopefully not. I have nothing against electrical vehicles or electrical lawnmowers, if that's what you want to buy, but let the people make those choices. To say that we're going to say, oh, we're not going to pass this because nobody has attempted to do it yet? Well, there's a whole lot of things that haven't been attempted yet, and yet we have laws and constitutions to protect the rights of the people to live their lives without interference of future governments.
So, JR, this comes as we're going to look ahead next week that this was one theme. There are always some type of themes, right? Mm-hmm. Carjacking, stiffer penalties, et cetera. But next week it's going to be about unemployment issues. But let's go back to the bill about obtaining public records and fees reimbursed on documents that people have already turned over voluntary. Are you getting any sense from the governor's office whether this has any legs to it?
No, I don't know how to be opposed to it. This would overturn a Supreme Court ruling from last summer, which basically said if you file a lawsuit to get open records and the authority that has them turns them over, even if the lawsuit is filed, you can only get the records if there's an adverse change or a change in the legal status. Basically, the court orders something, rules in your favor. What often happens with these things is you file a lawsuit to get the records and they turn them over because they're pressured by that lawsuit. They realize you're going to lose. Advocates for open government will say, the current system the Supreme Court created, you could hold on to those records as long as possible, delay. Wait till the last second before you know you're going to lose the lawsuit, then turn them over and avoid attorney's fees. This would reverse that. With the gas power stuff, you know, look, the reality is California is moving this direction. California buys a lot of cars, or people of California do. So people in the industry will tell you that often when you see big states like that set standards, industry moves toward that standard and it affects everybody. The United States government also moving toward higher fuel efficiency. So even if it's not signed into law here, you may see fewer and fewer gas-powered cars in 10, 20 years in Wisconsin because of this move nationally toward hybrids and electric cars.
Right, and we also know the federal government is trying to give, you know, tax breaks to people who buy electric vehicles. That was something that I've seen a lot recently, even in ads, too, of trying to get people to go more of green, you can say. All right, just talked about this. Looking ahead to next week, the Assembly is in on Tuesday, and they're going to be doing a series of bills targeting unemployment benefits. We talked about this previously on the show. The bills range from tying the number of weekly benefits based on the state's unemployment rate. It would also make drastic changes at the Department of Workforce Development and take benefits away from someone if they don't show up for a job interview. Most of these are likely to be doomed for Evers' veto pen because almost all of them are identical bills that were introduced last year. But there's a bigger picture here. like we've talked about before, JR, that Republicans are trying to go on this message because based off the statewide referendum that was non-binding, did ask about welfare benefits and whether able-bodied adults should be required to search for work. So they're trying to get their message around and see what works and maybe resonates with voters.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all theme day.
Theme day.
Unemployment insurance. So we're going to see that. But it's also better territory for Republicans to talk about than we talked before. This is a better issue for them than talking about abortion, these other things that aren't really going so well for them. They're coming around to like, okay, this is a better path forward for us than talking about these other things.
All right, now let's have a blunt conversation.
Oh,
all right,
man,
here comes the puns about medical marijuana legislation. Yesterday is considered 420. It's a big day for supporters of marijuana across the nation. And there's always been this debate that comes up, I think, almost every day on 420 about where does Wisconsin stand. But who you really always want to hear from is Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu. So first, let's do some background here before we get to the latest news. Voss has always been a proponent, at least for over the past several years, of some fashion of medical marijuana. Well, there's always been this opposition from LeMahieu that he doesn't believe, as long as it is banned by the federal government, he doesn't support any legalization. But this week, yesterday, the AP talked to Voss, and Voss once again kind of signaled some movement on possible legislation that he's working privately, kind of behind the scenes, to build support for a medical cannabis program that could very well likely get bipartisan support. But that is just the Assembly. This also came on the same day as one of the strongest marijuana advocates, Senate Minority Leader, Melissa Agard, launched the Grassroots Tour, which is going to be a statewide tour that makes multiple stops for promote cannabis legalization. So with all these competing sides right now, to me, what Voss told the AP wasn't really necessarily anything earth-shattering, breaking, but it is momentum because these stories do really well because a majority of Wisconsinites, based on Marquette University Law School polls, there seems to be pretty broad support for some legalization, either a medical route or full recreational. But the problem is there is a lot of mixed caucus, especially in the Assembly, a lot of new faces there that Voss is trying to get a feel for that. So that's, to me, what he's been doing behind the scenes. We spoke to Representative Witke, a Republican from Racine, and he said, yes, he confirmed those conversations are happening. But he also said he's opposed to the recreational side. And a lot of lawmakers that I talked to yesterday, too, they just want to see what's in the bill. I mean, we've seen Senator Felskowski introduce a medical one that would involve kind of like tinctures and, you know, for strictly medical use and put restrictions in place. But when it comes to full legalization, I don't think there's going to be any movement on that. So let's just hear first from Representative Witke, who I just talked about how there's always this support for, like, yes, veterans, and we want to have these discussions, but devil's in the details. And then we'll also hear from Senator Agard, who's once again pushing forth for full legalization. Let's take a listen.
Wisconsinites are waiting for the Republicans in the legislature to take real action on legalization in Wisconsin. I know that when elected officials hear directly from the people of our communities, that we can envision and work together to create a roadmap for a future that we want in Wisconsin. And it is loud and clear that people want cannabis to be legalized in our state. It's not a matter of if cannabis becomes legal in Wisconsin. It's a matter of when and what the details of that policy are. Cannabis legalization is a gateway to opportunity in the state of Wisconsin. Let's roll up our sleeves. Let's get this done.
I would have to listen to what the proposal is. Many states have done medical marijuana. I've talked to a lot of veterans. I've talked to a lot of other groups that would like us to consider it for different things that would treat them. I'm more than glad to listen to that and find out what the framework is before we decide which way to go forward. So I have an open mind towards it. Whether my colleagues on either side of the Senate or the Assembly are drafting an additional bill, it'll come up for a public hearing, and we'll start the process all over again.
So there's still a lot of high hopes for this to happen this year, JR. But there's even more backstory, because Voss has said kind of different things that have been taken the wrong way. And Lemieux kind of triggered that last year when he said, we may be considerate in my caucus, but he's still, as far as I know, still is not a really strong supporter. But that could change. I mean, there's a lot of discussions going on.
Well, Lemieux changed the conversation because he said that his caucus might be behind a medical marijuana bill, finally. Voss then kind of tossed cold water on the idea in an interview, saying that he didn't know if there was support in his caucus. What he really meant was he had 16 new members. He hasn't gauged all their support for a medical marijuana bill. Now they're trying to work it out to see where they're at. But with everything, it's the details. Can you grow your own? Can you smoke it? Can you only take edibles? Can you take drops? I mean, like, what's the process? What kind of prescription do you have to have? You know, like, there's all kinds of things that be worked out. And if you get too restrictive, the Democrats say, this is not good enough for us. We're not there. Then becomes the rule of 50 and the rule of 17. What I mean by that is typically, not always, but typically, you need 50 Republican votes to pass anything in the Assembly and 17 in the Senate. They don't want minority party votes to pass something. So can you keep your caucus together on the details of medical marijuana bill when you still have a number of them who are fearful of medical marijuana turning into recreational marijuana, feeling this is an open the door to that prospect?
Yeah, and even Senator Agard has said previously and even yesterday at a presser that she doesn't really even want to see medical. She is still a strong proponent of going full legalization. So if that bill would come to, you know, the Senate, would she vote for it? I mean, it remains to be seen. It's also important to note, too, she wasn't even a big fan of the first public hearing. I think it was almost in nearly a decade, which was last year, they held a public hearing on Felskowski's bill for medical marijuana. So, you know, that was, you know, a lot of people got excited about that. That was a possibility. But even Agard said, this is not even going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not even a supporter of this bill as it stands. So this has just been an ongoing discussion that we'll keep tabs on. All right, let's get to stock picks this week. Rising is Mike Gallagher and Brian Stile due to fundraising numbers.
So FEC deadline was last week to file. Stile raised the most in delegation, north of $800,000. Big uptick for him. If you look at the first quarter of 2023 versus first quarter of 2021, quite the significant increase. But three things have happened since that 2 years ago. One, Republicans took the majority in the House. That always helps. Two, he has now become part of leadership, right? He's the chair of the administration committee. And three, his seat is a little more interesting, right? So Governor Evers lost his seat by about 743 votes, give or take a couple. Look at the head-to-head, him and Michaels in 2022. Stile was able to beat back a underfunded challenger easily in 2022. The way to fend off a strongly funded challenger in 2024 is to raise a lot of money and show I'm going to be tough to beat. Now, the question remains, what will the seat look like in 2024? We've talked about, with Protasiewicz winning the Supreme Court race, there will be likely be, well, we assume there's going to be, or we expect there to be, a lawsuit filed to challenge legislative districts. Probably one than do the congressional ones. So we've talked before, do Democrats, if they are successful, and there's a lot of ifs, right, a lot of things that have to happen. If they're successful, do they go and try and make the first more Democratic, the third, the fifth? Like, where do they try and move numbers around to make the best map they can? And then that's also assuming the court would bless their map and not a Republican map. So that's all remains to be seen. But he is definitely on the upswing financially in front of his seat. Now, Gallagher, he has the biggest war chest of the eight members of Congress, $3.3 million. Not that far behind the $3.9 million Timmy Baldwin has. That war chest is part of the reason why Gallagher is an attractive candidate for U.S. Senate in 2024. Now, it also buys him time, which is a big thing in politics. He can kind of like bide his time, keep raising money for his House seat, and watch what happens, as we talked. If things go south for the economy, if things go south for Joe Biden, if, maybe come spring of next year, he goes, hey, I've got this money sitting there, it's a good launching pad, I'm going to hop into the race for U.S. Senate. But he has time because of that money. Now, you have to also know with Gallagher, I mean, he is chair of the Select Committee on China. That's one reason why he probably wouldn't run for Senate, because he's got a good thing going. And you can't forget that the Trump factor with Gallagher. He lost favor with some Trump voters because of January 6th of 2021, he called on the then president to basically call off the supporters, get them out of the Capitol, pull back. He's been critical at times. This week, he hosted a meet and greet with Ron DeSantis with congressional members. Now, people called him and said that he's not endorsing anybody. This is just an opportunity to hear out the Florida governor. But All these things add up to little kind of like irritants for the Trump base of the party. If there was a statewide GOP primary for U.S. Senate, Gallagher's in it, how do you do if you run against a Trump candidate? You know, big question. But just don't forget that dynamic for him. That everybody's talking about what a great candidate he would be. Probably in a general election, but he might have some issues in a primary in Wisconsin because of these Trump issues.
And speaking of the U.S. Senate race, moves on right to our mixed individual, who is Congressman Tom Tiffany, after he has created some domains for a possible U.S. Senate websites, I should say. Yeah,
so acknowledge that he's looking at running for U.S. Senate. Now, Republicans struggled with a couple things, right, Emily? So money's a factor. The Trump thing's a factor. Suburban Milwaukee's a factor. If you were to put Tom Tiffany on the ballot, you would have issues with all three things that right now are causing Republicans problems. It's not a very good fundraiser. He raised like $37,000 first 3 months of the year. That's not a lot at all for a member of Congress. Two, he's from northern Wisconsin, not well known in the population centers. Great feel for the populist Trump base of the party, but the party needs to win back these suburban areas to do better statewide elections. Now, that doesn't mean they can't win. Ron Johnson won, don't forget that. But if you're a Trumpy candidate and you're running statewide, you aren't going to do well with that southeast Wisconsin voting block you're trying to win back. So the question is, why is he thinking about this? Well, one, he may think he's got a shot. Maybe at 65, he's like, you know, I've been here for a few years. It's up or out for me. I don't want to be just a lifer, because he could hold that House seat forever.
Yeah. Even, mm-hmm.
No matter what map you draw, you can't make the 7th a swing seat. It is very, very red. He could be there forever. Maybe he's got his eye on running for governor someday and thinking, well, you know, if I float my name out there or raise my profile. So there are all kinds of like things that maybe is a motivation. But Republicans I talked to this week are not thrilled with the idea of him as the nominee, thinking that it wouldn't help solve their issue. Now, this is, you know, mid-April of 2023. November's a long way away of 2024. They said right now it's not the best profile. But keep an eye on that. And Democrats, they're almost giddy at the prospect of having another Trump-like candidate
on the
ballot to face Tammy Baldwin, who is in a very good position as we sit here right now. Not talking about next fall just yet.
All right. And falling this week is John Tate, the embattled former Borough Chair, who is now in even more hot water because of his recent position that was on the Racing Common Council and was charged with felony with misusing some funds.
So, remember, the governor pressured him to leave the parole commission because of people he was agreeing to let out, including a man who stabbed his wife to death 25 years ago or so, became an issue in the campaign. That's all separate from this. While Tate was on the council, they decided to create a position, a violence prevention coordinator, using federal COVID funds. He helped craft that position as president of the council. He then applied for the job. At the same time, he applied for a position with Madison as kind of a violence-type position, right? He got the Madison job. He was a finalist for the Racine job. They announced he's going to take the job with Madison in mid-October. He then rescinds it, takes the Racine job, and oh, by the way, asks for more money, more vacation time, and to be eligible for this program that gives you a $10,000 forgivable loan if you buy a house in Racine. All manage that stuff. Then he said, okay, wait a second. I realize that state law says you can't really take a job while you're, you know, in this position. So I'm going to put it off until after my council term is over, which end I think this week, and right before the end of the charge of the felony. Basically, he uses position to enrich himself by doing this. Now, I'm a lawyer, will see how this goes, but it's not a great spot to be in. You're talking about being in that kind of a pickle.
Right, and he's kind of been almost well-known in a lot of headlines, like you mentioned, with parole being a big issue in the midterms. All right, that will do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.